Good morning! This is Sean from the SoulForge podcast. Be a better human, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Too Much Scrolling for February 6th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Big Peter Schwartzky, the Bears fan.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, what a great Super Bowl that was, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a great Super Bowl.
46-10.
Steve, are you going to practice your Southern accent for us?
No, there was no Southern teams playing. It was the New England Patriots and the Chicago Bears. 46-10, it was a great Super Bowl.
No South Side Chicago accent for us?
Oh, no. I live in the North now. This is my accent. As far as my students know, this is the way that I say words.
Oh, good stuff.
My Southern good stuff. Accent. Yes, I watched the Super Bowl on Sunday, Chip.
You did?
I did. The Super Bowl. The 1985 Bears, Chicago Bears, one and only Super Bowl win.
Congratulations to the winner. Denver Broncos.
Denver Broncos.
We record before the Super Bowl. Let's just say that Super Bowl Saturday should be a thing.
I think Super Bowl Saturday should be a thing. We should absolutely get some legislation in place to make that happen.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. The reason why we bring up the Super Bowl and the 85 Bears is because you and I got a chance to go to our local theater and see a documentary called 85, The Greatest Team in Football History. This is presented by Fathom Events.
Yes.
And boy, was that fun.
Steve, the reason Peter Schwartzky decided to show up was because I think those fans, they were in the crowd.
And yes,
if you were a person outside the Chicago area and you were looking at us, I think you found
you might not
super
understand.
Fans. You've got super fans.
Yeah, you might not understand the love that the Chicago area has for this 85 Bears team.
They moved us to a bigger theater, Steve.
This is the biggest Fathom event we've ever attended. They usually have us in one of the smaller theaters, and there's usually a handful of people who are really enjoying whatever it is that Fathom Events is giving us. This time, they had to move us to the really big theater, and they virtually sold out. We didn't sit next to each other.
That's why they moved us to a bigger theater.
Right. We weren't able to sit next to each other in the bigger theater. This place was packed with Bears fans with all their paraphernalia.
Steve, a lot of beer was sold that night.
A lot of beer was flowing. This was a Monday night, and boy, the theater was not prepared for the crowd that was coming in to enjoy this documentary.
Well, I'm sure they were very happy. They sold a lot of beer that night.
Oh, yeah,
a lot of trips to the bathroom during this this film. A lot of people had to get up and head out.
And our executive producer, Laura, and her family showed up for this because they're big Bears fans. This was a real event.
This was a lot of fun.
And a good documentary. I do recommend that you pick up this documentary. It's on Amazon right now. You can rent it for $5.
They should run this thing for a month here in Chicago.
I agree.
Because we really did have such a large fan base show up. And that's on a Monday night.
Yeah.
Imagine if it would have played through the weekend. And I think that you could have had... I think there needs to be more films aimed at something that has this much passion.
Target audience.
Now, you could almost think maybe there's a White Sox film that could be made, but they'll probably forget about that They'll
forget
them. They'll put together the Cubs.
Poor White Sox.
No kidding. It's like every time they put together a list of Chicago championships, like somehow this championship just gets dropped, and they're like, what just happened?
It happens all the time.
We had a championship.
The Cubs, everyone. The Cubs. And then the White Sox fans are like, what about the White Sox?
We had a World Series, too. We had a long streak, too, you know.
That's right. This was a really good documentary. I did take issue with the fact that they showed the Challenger accident three times in the Chicago Bears documentary. I don't think that fit. I know why it's in there.
Well, for those young people who don't remember, mm-hmm. and I didn't remember until I saw this, the Bears won the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
and then 2 days later, the Challenger event happened.
Yeah.
And we were kids then, Steve.
Right. Oh, yeah. These were two big parts of my childhood, no question.
We were kids. We were older than maybe the kids you teach. In fact, probably by a number of years. But we certainly were children.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is for probably our generation, the Martin Luther King mm-hmm. shot day, the JFK shot day.
Right.
You know, something that you could picture where you were at that moment.
Absolutely. Remember all the nuns wheeling in the TVs so that we could watch the Challenger going into space. And then it didn't go into space.
Yeah.
And boy, was that a moment in my childhood.
Well, the Bears, certainly the celebration that was this movie mm-hmm. about that team is awesome. The characters that were these players.
Oh, yeah. These guys, I still know the names of all of these men. These men are bigger than life, mm-hmm. and they walk around the streets of Chicago. We got to see Kevin Butler the other day in a local bar and hold the Super Bowl ring. My 10-year-old is got Kevin Butler's ring on his finger, and these guys are amazing characters. Name the guy from the Chicago Bears 5 years ago. I couldn't do it. Maybe I could think of one guy.
Jay Cutler, Steve.
Okay. But other than that one, this was a list of 20, 30 different guys.
And that was one of the stories of it. This is before Facebook. This is before Twitter. This is before you had social media the way it is. Growing up, where I grew up, I only got to see the Bears play the Monday night game that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
That was their only loss.
The only loss of the season, the Miami Dolphins.
And the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so.
And the Super Bowl.
There was a lot of build around there.
And you heard about it.
Yeah, but they still were not putting on, usually for my area, because we did not have a football team.
Uh-huh.
The Redskins were considered our home team.
Okay.
So we're in North Carolina. Redskins, we always got the Redskins game. And then they always gave us the winning team. So we got a lot of Dallas, and we got a lot of San Francisco 49ers because of just when they played. But when you really got down to it, the Bears were not put on as game of the week for us.
Mm-hmm.
That was the following year. After they had won.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very interesting. We just got to hear and see the highlights. Well, for you guys here, you got to experience them every day. You know, they've talked about the, not losing, just not being successful football team.
For decades.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, 63 was the first championship before 85.
And they started the season as just regular guys playing football, mm-hmm. and then you had the build. And by the end of the season, I mean, they were superstars.
Right.
And that was the precursor to what Jordan and the Bulls experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it changed NBA forever.
Yeah, quite possibly.
I mean, it really did. Because Jordan, there's a divide between the Magic Johnson and Larry Bird NBA and then the Jordan. It just took it to a different level.
Yeah.
And the Bears basically began maybe the modern football team.
Hmm.
Although Jerry Jones down in Dallas probably showed the NFL how to really do it.
Right.
But there's no doubt that these were the... If this team was down in Dallas, Jerry Jones would have known how to market every bit of it.
Right.
This was kind of much more ground up. Very much a reflection of Chicago.
That's right. Those blue-collar guys who were just doing their job, and because they did their job really well, people noticed. This was a really good documentary. I do recommend that you go to Amazon, go to our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, and go watch it.
And if you get lucky, maybe you can sit next to Jim McMahon.
There you go.
Get some stories from him.
What an interesting character. What a guy. Boy, what an interesting character.
At the end of the movie, they did have a lot of extras. So hopefully, if you can stream it, which you can't stream it now, that they'll have those extras on there,
I
too.
I hope so. I also got a chance to start watching Altered Carbon on Netflix. This was dropped on Netflix on Friday. I've gotten 2 hours into it. I'm going to withhold judgment. I just want to tell you, maybe you would like this if you like Blade Runner.
Blade Runner?
Essentially, it's Blade Runner.
It is?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay.
So this is a future...
A future where you are just a consciousness on a hard drive, and your consciousness can be plugged into any body, and you can have the adventures of that body.
Wow.
All right. I'll give a full review when I'm done with all 10 hours of this.
Beautiful.
You saw some of the great movies of 2017, and you got a chance to see Phantom Thread this week.
Yes. It stars Abraham Lincoln.
Daniel Day-Lewis, the character actor who absolutely takes on whatever character he's playing. You are just applying some other character he played.
He is also the last Mohican, Steve.
Oh, Lord. We talked about this one last week with Kyle Hickman, and boy, he really enjoyed this film. Did you enjoy this one as much as Kyle did?
Well, I did. I will tell you that we had a couple of ladies who were in front of me. I saw it on a Saturday morning,
mm-hmm.
and it was me and these the two older ladies who sat in front of me.
Ladies?
At the end of the movie, as I'm walking out, they asked if I could explain the movie to them.
So 4 hours later.
No, it's not 4 hours. This is a grown-up film.
Uh-huh.
And it's certainly much more heady than the average film out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I say, will you enjoy this film? If you're a person who likes light comedies and stuff like that, this is not for you. This is much more of a thinking person's film.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a sadistic part of it, mm-hmm. too. Not to give away all the things, but a very successful man
mm-hmm.
basically has an affair and ultimately marries a waitress.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tailor. Very refined, very restrictive life. And anyway, she changes him.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time you're thinking, did she change him for the good or not for the good?
He dresses her and she changes him.
That's right.
Wow.
Well, that's a good point, because that's one of the scenes. Mm-hmm. One of the initial scenes is he meets her, they go on a date, they come back to his place, and he makes her a dress. You know, and his sister's sitting there taking the measurements for him as he's calling him out. And the point is that he really did. He kind of made her.
Hmm.
And anyway, she has obviously her her relationship to him and the things that she chooses to do. And there's your story without giving it away. Once again, more of an intellectual film. And I would recommend it probably 85, 90 out of 100.
So one of your top movies of 2017. You agree with the critics on that?
Absolutely. This is a very good film.
Okay.
I don't know if it's for all of our listeners, though.
Best actor, Daniel Day-Lewis?
I think Abraham Lincoln did a pretty good job.
It's not Abraham Lincoln. He takes on different parts. You also got a chance to see Score. Score!
That's right.
This one is a documentary about the music of the movies.
It is. In fact, I did not realize this until I was watching this film. The first modern score that they were mentioning was A Streetcar Named Desire.
Hmm.
So, and that was, they brought in a gentleman, I think it was a jazz musician, to write the score, and he revolutionized or created what the modern orchestrated score would be for a movie.
And as we know, music can definitely make a movie. There's so many movies that you can think of the music.
Absolutely. I mean, you hear the Jaws theme, like, don't, 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 don't.
Uh-huh.
Spielberg was talking about that and about his meeting with John Williams. When Spielberg asked John Williams to describe how to make the score, he goes, oh, they sat down at the piano, and he goes, he only played the two notes, dun dun, dun dun, and he said, oh no, you're teasing with me. That was really the score.
That's really the score for Jaws.
But when you watch Jaws,
mm-hmm.
and you're under the water and stuff like that, you get what's going on without seeing this shark.
The character of the music adds to the tension of the scene so well.
He's almost an actor with this music.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what it is. We talked about the Star Wars. We talked about Jurassic Park and Raiders of the Lost Ark. So mm-hmm. those are all John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
We had interviews with Danny Elfman, who does all the Tim Burton stuff.
Sure.
And we got a little bit that he had written a very long piece that was like an Oingo Boingo type orchestra theme or something of that nature. Well, I think that became the Pee Wee Herman, because Tim Burton did Pee Wee Herman's mm-hmm. first movie.
Right.
I think that became the Pee Wee Herman theme that they played throughout that. Anyway, we also get the hot people right now are Hans Zimmer,
mm-hmm.
which we know from Batman and from Pirates of the Caribbean or Caribbean.
Depending
on where you're from.
Right.
And then, you know, we this is a fascinating. Thomas Newman, he did American Beauty. He did Lemony Snicket. When you hear this music, you know what this music is.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they had the gentleman who put together the music for the Avengers, Marvel's of the Avengers movies. And what he likes to do is he likes to go into the theater when the theater's full. He buys his ticket, sits up front, and then turns around and looks at the audience. Because what he's looking at is how is the audience reacting to the music I put together.
Watching the emotion on the faces of the audience. That's what music can do, is add emotion, add feeling.
We got a little bit of a history of some of the recording studios, some of how these things are put together. These are really special people, and they have special career. And it's, what's amazing is the orchestra out there could be looking at the music for the first time. And there's a little improvising if they need a little something there. And you imagine you being a director sitting in that booth, mm-hmm. listening to music, you're watching the film, it's not quite right. How do you articulate that to a director?
Right.
And I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. I highly recommend this film. I got it off iTunes. I think it was part of their 99 cents group.
Nice.
So if you have interest in doing it, look at your streaming services and see what's available.
Very good.
That one. That would be probably 75, 80 out of 100.
Okay. That one's called Score, a film music documentary. You can find all the information in our show notes. Opening this week, we've got all sorts of things.
International flavors, Steve.
International films this week. There's a movie called Padman.
This looks fascinating, Steve.
I love the trailer. The trailer on this is very fun, very playful. It plays on the whole idea of Spider-Man and the superheroes and Superman. This guy is Padman.
Yes, he's from India, Steve.
Yes, this is an Indian film.
He invented low-cost sanitary pads for women.
In rural India, he found a need, he saw this need, and he found a way. This is based on a true story.
And they decided to make a movie about this,
and
Steve.
They made a movie about it.
And there looks like some humor that's going
to
be available.
It really, according to the trailer, this is a very funny, playful kind of tale. And I look forward to seeing if it lives up to its trailer.
I don't know how you would convince somebody to go see this. Hey, honey, let's go to a movie. But this does
Happy
look...
Valentine's Day.
That's right. But it does look fun.
It does. It looks like a fun tale. I'm sure that it's a great film.
How about for our more adventurous listeners, Steve?
Yeah, Valentine's Day is coming up, Chip. And so it's another one of those years where Valentine's Day comes up and we have to have that film for young lovers. This one is called 50 Shades Freed. It is the third in the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy and thankfully the last.
Steve, the Greys, now married.
Yes.
They have another adventure, Steve.
Of course they do.
And then probably...
They're very adventurous.
And then it's probably some playtime.
I have to admit, I've never seen any of these films. I have no interest in this.
He has the Blu-ray copies.
No, I
can't wait to get his 4K stream.
No, I don't think this is a cinematic triumph, this film, but maybe it is. Maybe I'm judging it.
Maybe he's watching in his playroom. You never know.
Oh, dear. There are some other movies, Chip.
So now that you got through those two.
Yeah, there's a movie called The 1517 to Paris. This is based on a true story of a terrorist plot on a train in France.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood is directing this.
Yes.
But tell me who's starring in this.
The stars of this movie are the actual heroes from this actual event that happened in France.
So they're going to play themselves.
They are playing themselves, going through this adventure.
Only more handsome now.
Oh, they are very handsome men. They certainly started with three very handsome men, and Clint Eastwood saw the potential of these guys.
You could be a star, fellas.
You could be... Is that your Clint Eastwood voice?
No, it's, you could be a star.
You could be a star. Yeah, this is a great American hero story, like a Clint Eastwood story, and he's still Clint Eastwood, and now he's just the director, and this looks like a great adventure.
What is the film that we saw that had the train, that had the black jello?
Snowpiercer.
This is like Snowpiercer, Steve.
No, this is nothing like Snowpiercer. It's only on a train. That's the only thing that's like Snowpiercer.
So, like Snowpiercer, it takes place on a train. Well, and there are heroes involved because Captain America was in Snowpiercer.
There are guns and there's fighting, so I guess it's kind of like that, but not really.
All right, Steve, there are children's movies.
Yeah, Easter is coming, sort of.
That's right, we got Aussies.
So, yeah, maybe Australian Easter is earlier.
Aussies.
There's a movie called Peter Rabbit. This is the reimagining of Beatrix Potter's famous Peter Rabbit story, told for a 2018 audience.
I don't even think this was inspired by it, except for the rabbit has a blue jacket. This could be called Johnny Rabbit.
Yeah, the trailer really looks fun. This looks like a fun movie. The critics have been really kind to this. They say it's a fun adventure.
Lots of Aussies.
But I'm not sure that it's Peter Rabbit. I agree with you on that. Yeah, well, all-star cast.
Oh, it's got Sam Neill.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Got Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie, Daisy Ridley, Rose Byrne, Sam Neill, Sia. This is an all-star cast, and it's going to be a lot of fun, but I'm still not convinced it's Peter Rabbit.
But this is the movie to go see, because your alternative as a children's movie is...
something called Monster Family. This
looks
is,
excellent.
This is, well, there are lots of movies that come out in the course of a year.
When I say it looks excellent, it looks like it's ready for DVD right around October.
This was a film that was purchased by DirecTV. This is another one of those DirecTV produced pictures, and the fact that they're putting it out in February is very unusual until you think about when it will be released on DirecTV.
Set up. All right, now. All the family turns into monsters. Like, one's going to be like the Frankenstein.
Uh-huh.
One's going to be the vampire.
One's the mummy and one's the werewolf.
Yeah,
it's not the Munsters at all.
So, for some reason, your kids don't want to watch Peter Rabbit. I guess you have another one.
I guess that's the one to go to. This does feature Nick Frost and Catherine Tate as voice actors. So there's a lot of voice work.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah, those are two great comedians. I would watch them do something, but I'm not sure that this is the movie that I'll see this week. There's all sorts of choices. Go to the movies. Go rent that 85 Bears movie. You won't be disappointed. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week, and you have been reading a book called The Death of the Banker, The Decline and Fall of the Great Financial Dynasties and Triumph of the Small Investor. This is by Ron Chernoff. Ron Chernoff, we might know as the author of that Hamilton book.
Alexander Hamilton?
That Hamilton book that some guy got a hold of on vacation and read it on vacation and decided to make a musical out of it.
Lin-Manuel may take this book
and make a banker movie?
Yeah.
Banker musical? A rapping banker?
Exactly. It'll have
lots of Hamiltons in it. It's all about the Hamiltons, baby.
It'll have J.P. Morgan in it doing a little rap. Well, this is really three essays.
Okay.
And this actually, you know, obviously, as soon as you heard that title, your eyes immediately popped up and said, oh, I've got to know more. And I will say, I absolutely enjoyed this. Now, I also have a little bit of anchor towards that.
Uh-huh.
But the essay he wrote on J.P. Morgan, I want to read more because I think he wrote a book on J.P. Morgan.
Oh.
And I think I want to read more.
So that's your character that you think came out of this story is you want to know more about that guy.
Oh, absolutely. This is sort of the history of banking and what it was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Basically how wealth at one time was incredibly concentrated in the incredible wealthy who potentially could have stolen it from other people. I don't mm-hmm. know, kings and queens. I'm not saying anything, right?
Right.
All right. But anyway, and how eventually it, through mutual funds and through how we buy things today, basically has gone out and the average Joe now collectively owns the majority of wealth.
Right.
And so this is a sort of a fascinating evolutionary story. But anyway, we also are getting a little bit of the background about how things kind of came to be how they are today. And what you realize is that these markets really weren't created. I mean, they were created, but they certainly were not what they are today. Things are much more efficient. As clumsy as you may think some things are today, somebody had to build those in the past. And this is how they made deals with Rockefellers and Carnegie and Vanderbilt and all this other stuff, and how they, at one time, they had talked about J.P. Morgan knew nothing about trains, like Snowpiercer. But...
It all comes back to Snowpiercer.
It does.
Where we go.
Exactly. But ultimately, owned, I think, more train miles than any of the other single owners.
Hmm.
And that's because they would build and they would fault. You learned a little bit about the deals that were being made. Let me give you an example. Let's just say that you and I are in New York And we decided we're going to build a train track from New York to Chicago. And you said, well, that's great. Well, if our neighbor heard that we're going to build this, they may come and they may start building that same
stretch.
Yeah. And the idea behind that was not that they, you know, this could only make money for one. It couldn't make money for two.
Right.
So the idea for that person, our neighbor, who decided they were going to come in and do this, was basically to extort us. Say, listen, make me stop. Pay me off to stop. Well, J.P. Morgan was the person who was coming in there, and he was basically saying, this is how we're going to do it. And, you know, whether they chose to pay off or some other type of thing, you say, well, this could be making monopolies. Well, these things didn't exist at that time.
Right.
And so they were just being delivered. He basically facilitated the agreements, maybe the backdoor agreements, that allowed the stuff to initially come to be. And later on, we can look back at it and say, you know, these are good deals or not good deals, and how we want to get competition involved and all this other stuff. But this was sort of the ugly backside of how they got the engine working the what it is. It basically made the wealth that we had today. There's a whole bunch of story about this. Like I said, there's three essays. The one I left with that I liked most was J.P. Morgan. I highly recommend this. It was a fast read. And I think I'm going to pick up the J.P. Morgan book because of this. Let me leave with one last thing. When J.P. Morgan died, I'm going from memory. He died, maybe in today's dollars, it'd be like roughly $1 billion. So it wasn't that, but, you know, whatever the equivalent of $1 billion would be today. I mean, was at that time. And Carnegie, this shows how wealth really was crazy, said that's all he had. You know, he was so poor. Yeah, you know, roughly he was basically saying something to the, that's it. But the power of J.P. Morgan wasn't his wealth. The power of J.P. Morgan was the wealth he controlled, because he controlled billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. Morgan was trained in Germany and England and Europe on banking, basically was able to bridge European ways of doing things with the new way that the Americans are doing things. The way we do things in the United States are very different than some European countries. We're going to see European companies most likely have to adopt much more of the American way of doing things. That doesn't necessarily mean it's for the better. I'm just trying to say that the influences that we have are incredible around the world, and they, in many ways, the seeds were here where they started. Fascinating little Ron. Ron Chernoff is an incredibly talented writer. I think I'm going to read a lot more of his work.
If he can influence stage musicals as much as he did by giving his words to Lin-Manuel to make Lin-Manuel hear this music, I'm sure that he is a wonderful writer. I've never read any of his works. I really am intrigued by this.
Well, he has a whole list of them. In fact, on my books, I have a Washington one I should be reading. I'm going to look more at more of the things that he has, because I do think that he has a unique understanding because of the research he has done for his books.
Excellent. This one is called The Death of the Banker, The Decline and Fall of the Great Financial Dynasties, and The Triumph of the Small Investor by Ron Chernoff. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
There's so many things happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of them. One of the things that's happening is we are turning from the DVD and Blu-ray to a streaming world where we're going to stream so many of our videos. But there's still something to be said about having a collection of DVDs and Blu-rays.
Well, it's that physical media or physical books, things like that, having a physical copy of this. Mm-hmm. As we remember from reviewing I Am Legend, Steve, if there's ever a vampire zombie apocalypse, the library is going to be very important to us.
That's right.
And film projectors will be too, because if we have to have...
We might have to go back a couple of steps in order to get that material.
Well, anyway, we're talking a little bit about physical media versus having it virtual, like a Kindle or the electronic stuff, or using the DVDs and Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. And so the gentleman started off by giving us some reasons why he still has his collection. And he said, I wanted to watch Air Force One, which was the fifth highest grossing film of the year it was released. It stars Harrison Ford.
Get off my plane.
Exactly. Yes. Steve, it wasn't streaming.
Yeah.
It wasn't available on Hulu. It wasn't available on Netflix. It wasn't available on to purchase through Vudu or Amazon Prime.
Right.
Or, you know, so if it's not available, then the only way to see it would be through physical media.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to recognize that as wonderful as these services are, everything isn't available.
Titles come in and out every first of every month. There's a whole different group of titles that are available.
In fact, there's a whole group of people who collect albums
mm-hmm.
that are not, they never made CDs for, which means that they never had streaming services for.
Right.
And, you know, some of them get uploaded to YouTube for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of any type of thing that there's just not enough demand to maybe print copies of, that, you know, we're lucky to have Google Library and things like mm-hmm. that available. But you can also think about times that you want to see something.
Yeah. There are certain titles that I want to see, and if I don't have a way to find them, I'm out of luck.
So if the apocalypse does come, Steve,
mm-hmm.
at least you have your copy, a Blu-ray of Star Wars to watch.
And Blazing Saddles.
And Blazing Saddles.
That's all I really need. And The Jerk. I've got a Blu-ray copy of The Jerk, too. That's all I need. I just need this remote control and this chair. That's all I really need.
What are your feelings of this?
I have moved to a fully streaming lifestyle. I do still have my Blu-ray collection. My top 20 movies are definitely still in there. But my collection, because I used to work in a video store, I used to have an enormous collection of VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all in the garbage. I now have a pretty sizable collection of DVDs and Blu-rays that are just collecting dust in the basement.
Yeah, I think that we're kind of in that. You know, we have libraries that mm-hmm. we can go to.
That's right.
And there are some libraries in our area that have very deep collections.
Right.
But they're certainly not encyclopedic collections.
What they do have is the ability to borrow things from other collections. So we sure. have access to the whole area's worth of libraries, which is one thing that this article did not mention, is the idea that there are other ways to find a deep collection. It doesn't have to be in everybody's basement.
Yes, exactly. I go back and forth this. I think we're in a tweener stage.
Yes.
As we start getting better, I want to say broadband, you know, fiber mm-hmm. or whatever coming to your area, as we're able to stream at higher levels, you know, the thing I immediately was drawn to also is I when I watched La La Land, I watched it through the HBO app.
Mm-hmm.
And while it was on my big screen TV, the first scene says La La Land across the board. Well, mine didn't say La La Land. Mine said a land.
Mm.
I didn't have the L, and I didn't
off.
Have the D.
Yeah.
So what I didn't get was the way that the person, director, put together this film. I got a cut-off version of it. And I think that will be maybe one of the future things I'm looking forward to, is where you have the choice of watching it how the director asked it to be presented.
Right, because it's all compressed in order to get it to you, and certain decisions have to be made about how that happens. The idea of convenience trumps fidelity is so often the case. There's so many people that don't care about the fidelity of the picture. When they see it in a Blu-ray format, it's amazing.
Absolutely, especially if you have your surround sound set up really nicely. Yeah, these are all things that are in many people's grasp.
Mm-hmm.
So you really can watch a beautiful, you can get, you may not be able to get the movie theater version, but you're close enough that you're going, wow, this is pretty amazing.
Changes the experience.
And there's always those dream theaters that people have in their basements and stuff.
Oh, yeah. We have a couple of those around the area. I used to have one in my old house, and then I moved to this house, and it just doesn't fit.
You had
my
kids,
basement.
Steve. You
well,
had kids.
I put up the podcast studio on the dance floor instead. You know.
Okay.
Decisions. There are all sorts of ways to look at this material. There's all sorts of ways to have these experiences. One thing that now exists is something called Human Uber. Human Uber is the idea that you can experience things through somebody else's eyes.
Well, let's think about last weekend on Sunday, the Super Bowl. And you can be with your neighbors or over a friend's house. Maybe mm-hmm. you're watching the event on the television.
Through the multiple cameras that are set up for that.
Well, that's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
Well, think about a future where you know, some guy's wearing a hat,
uh-huh,
and he's on the 50-yard line.
And he is experiencing the game from that vantage point, and you are experiencing maybe through virtual reality.
Maybe through the referees.
Oh, wow.
Maybe through the quarterback's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you basically could experience it through any view you choose in the entire
stadium. That's pretty amazing.
And
Intel's working on a system that is very similar to that, where they have just a huge number of cameras all the way around the entire circle of the stadium, so we can get those views. But what if it was a real person that you were seeing the event through?
How would that change warfare? How would that change going into a concert?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would it change anything? You could be on the House floor while the big vote was going on, in Washington, D.C., and the next moment, you could be watching some orchestra playing in
Tokyo.
Yeah.
Anywhere around the world. We are on the cusp of changing entertainment, changing our viewpoint on so many of these historic events that the sky's the limit on what we can do.
Well, think about the series you're watching right mm-hmm. now on Netflix.
Altered Carbon.
Yeah. Are we getting a little bit of a touch of what the story is touching on?
The idea of jumping into somebody else's skin, literally, and experiencing life through their body is the idea of Altered Carbon. Mm-hmm. We're talking about just the visual part here. But,
sure.
But that's a pretty quick leap between that and the movie Surrogates. Remember the movie Surrogates with Bruce Willis running around with all the robots?
Bruce Willis.
Uh-huh. Where all the people are in their little apartments with their virtual reality goggles, and their surrogate, their robot that looks kind of like them, only prettier and thinner, is out in the world doing all those mundane things, so we don't have to.
All right. So let's think about that this week.
Okay.
Anyway, Steve, let's just talk a little bit about advertising.
Okay, let's talk about science and advertising, which don't really go together very often, but this is one of those cases where it does. IKEA, you know, that Swedish furniture store where they give the instructions and the little tools.
They print the book, don't they?
In the book, they came up with a brilliant idea. They said, well, if you're pregnant, you're going to want to buy a crib. You're going to want to buy a crib from IKEA, obviously, because that's the most frustrating way to put together your baby's room.
It's a Lego of adult furniture, Steve.
Oh, yeah. It's a Lego of furniture. You can make it. If you're a master craftsman, you can make whatever you want. And if you don't know what you're doing, you wind up with something other than a bookcase. But the idea of the crib being on sale, makes sense.
You got to target an audience, Steve.
Right.
And obviously you want audience that can really use this.
Right.
So how do you find out if your audience is ready to buy a crib, Steve?
So some brilliant advertising executive thought, you know, have the young lady urinate on the advertisement and have a little chemical in the paper that
tells you you're pregnant, Steve.
Tells her that she's pregnant or not.
This with is a sales prize.
Home pregnancy test on an advertisement in a magazine. Then, if you urinate on the paper and it says that you're pregnant, it also says, congratulations, you're pregnant, and here's a coupon for a crib. You take that coupon to the cashier at IKEA, and they immediately put it into a hazardous waste bag.
So you basically got the crib for half price.
Wow.
So that was what the discount
was. That's a pretty deep discount.
But anyway, you tore out the page. your wife took it in and came out and said, hey, guess what? We get a discount on a crib. You're a dad.
Congratulations. Here's your coupon.
Always interesting.
Always interesting. Marketing is so interesting.
Think about that. May have been very expensive at one time. It got so cheap that mm-hmm. basically it was just something to throw in an ad.
The science of knowing things is amazing right now. The information that we can find, the information that we have is just absolutely infinite. So this is the show to come to for more information. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. You can send us an email at TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Peter Schwartz. Super fan. Let's have some more sausages here.
Yeah, we'll see you in the future. Pal.